We judge others by their behavior. But we judge ourselves by our intentions. And what we're talking about is coming up with some ideas today which can be useful to you in communicating your ideas more effectively. Do you want to get some kind of feedback before the hostile Q&A session begins? Sure, and the only way you get it is by looking right at people and letting them respond. Even if it's negative, I think we want to get it so we know whether we're getting our message across or not. Here's the answer to the question, what do you do with your hands in front of a group? The answer is, don't plan gestures.
Welcome to this Listen and Learn program, filled with useful information. This session is designed to sharply increase your awareness on the subject and give you ideas and knowledge that you can put to work right away. As with all Listen and Learn programs, you hear from the experts, people who have already been there and who have had success. Of course, we can't hope to present everything there is to know in a short session like this, but we will give you all the important highlights so that you'll have a good overview when you've completed the session. For more information, listen to the message at the end of this cassette. Okay? Let's begin. Listen, learn, and enjoy.
Tom Kirby is a communications expert specializing in business communications. He's president of his own communicator training firm and has been a lawyer, radio personality, and broadcast executive. He's taught over 10,000 executives from Fortune 500 companies how to present their ideas persuasively, forcefully, confidently. He's done this through intensive feedback speech training programs. On this tape, working with audience participants, Tom shows how to get attention and hold attention, how to handle questions and improve speaker-listener rapport. Let's listen in.
Welcome to Better Face-to-Face Communications. Here is the umbrella theme. Some of you may have heard this before, and it never changes. This is what we're always trying to do, communicate a little bit better inside and outside the organization. What we're working on is not the intellectual part of what you say, but it's the physical part, the how you say it. And if I were to stop and have a discussion right now, everybody in the room would probably have several reasons why they agree that how you say it, especially in the selling business, but in all communication situations, is very often as important as the actual words themselves. Yes? That's what we're agreed on that. Now we want to do something about it. Now the problem in talking about communication skills, especially when we're talking about how to improve our skills, is this. It can't be done by talking about it. It's something that has to be experienced, and therefore, this is a workshop, and with the exception of a few comments between speakers, this will be a session where you're involved. In fact, we're going to have a way for everybody in the room to be involved in this little time together where we think about the unspoken communications, the invisible communications, body language. We could talk about a whole list of descriptions for the things that are happening that really communicate messages other than the words themselves. Now, here's how we do it. Normally, if we were to say we wanted to improve our communication skills, we got together, we'd have a small group of people and a videotape camera and playback unit so that we could go right past any opinions about whether somebody was communicating well or not, or effectively or not. We just take pictures of each speaker, show them back, let them make up their own minds. We do not have videotape capabilities here today. So what we're going to do is ask three of you to be volunteers to come to the front of the room and give three short talks, after which we'll have a discussion and talk about these nonverbal communicators, the physical part of communication. But we have to have the volunteers to do it, so we have material to work with. Before I ask for volunteers, I want to ask you all a question. This is not a trick question. It occurs to me that some of you, even though you'd like to improve your communication skills, you may have even thought about taking a course in negotiations or interviewing or public speaking. You may be a little reticent about getting up in front of a group, especially a peer group, to give a talk. Is there anybody in the room who's nervous, either now or any time, about the idea of speaking before a group? Anybody, would you just look around? See? Almost, raise your hands high so we can, this is not a trick question. Almost everybody is raising their hand to say at one time or another you're a little bit nervous about speaking before a group. I'm glad to see that we have an honest group. Because most everybody is. And according to a survey by the Book of Lists, they ask a cross-section of Americans, what's your greatest fear? And the number one fear of adults is speaking before groups. Six places ahead of death. Here's the survey. Greatest fears of adults. Number one fear, speaking before groups. Second, heights. Third, fear of deep water. Fourth, financial problems. Fifth, cancer. Sixth, flying. And seventh, fear is death. I guess the reason that speaking before a group is a greater fear than death is that we think there's a greater chance we're going to be called on to speak on a given day than to die. Some of you are going to be called on to speak right now. I did this just for one reason, to say you're in a large company because we're all a little bit nervous. How come? Why any sense of nervousness or surge of nervous energy when you're speaking before a group? Anybody? Maybe we have an inability to express the idea verbally. Okay, the comment is we're liable to embarrass ourselves. We're afraid of looking silly before the group. That's the consensus of most people I talk to. And there's a reason for being concerned about our behavior in front of a group, because sometimes our job depends on it. For instance, let me ask you this. How many in this room use seminars as a method of prospecting or selling new products to existing clients? Raise your hands. Look around. A lot of people. So we're talking about something here which is a serious consideration as part of your job, communicating ideas. Now, there are probably some people who did not raise their hands who have either thought about doing seminars or used to do one, and you just don't feel comfortable standing in front of a group of people. You may be perfectly relaxed one-on-one, but you can't get your ideas across well in front of a group because your nerves aren't under control, or you lack the experience, or you want to hone some skills. What I'd like is a lot of you to volunteer so that I can then pick three volunteers who will give three short talks. You won't be embarrassed. It'll be fun. It won't take long. And now could I see how many people will volunteer to participate. We're going to need a lot more volunteers for me to feel like you're interested. Raise your hands. Hi. Three volunteers. I'll tell you the subjects in a minute. They're very simple. All right. There's one volunteer, and your name is Ken. And Don is our second volunteer. How come no women are volunteering? There's one. Are you going to volunteer?
No.
Settles that. And that was enough. Okay, fair enough. Mark. Mark, Don, and Ken. Here's the first talk we'd like for you to give in front of the group. Introduce yourself. Tell us in less than 60 seconds your name, where you're from, something interesting that you're involved in, either at work or a project. But a talk of introduction that would help us get to know you a little bit better. I know you know a lot of people in the room, but assume that you don't know all of us so that you can make an effort to introduce yourself. This is something we're called on to do a lot in business and social situations, talk of self-introduction. So if you want to make some notes, feel free to do that so that you're organized about what you want to say, but plan not to bring your paper up with you when you give the talk. Here's what the rest of us are going to do. I said we could all be involved. What we're going to do is be the television camera and microphone so that each time one of our volunteers gives a talk, we will immediately have an instant replay and tell them everything we saw and heard, and perhaps in some cases it's not just seeing or hearing, but just feelings we get from the speakers as they communicate to us. Now, to help us stay on track, I've made a list of specific things we want to look for and listen for each time one of the speakers is up here. The visual signs will be signs of nervousness. Watch for that in case one of the speakers is nervous, and if so, Let's tell them exactly what we saw, not just that they may look nervous, but how it manifested itself. We'll be watching the speaker's posture. Were they standing up straight, leaning on one hip, moving from side to side? Where were their hands while they were talking? That's the question most people ask in advance of a public speaking program. What do I do with my hands? Now, we're not going to tell the volunteers ahead of time, but we will tell them what they do, in fact. Then, this last thing we'll look for is eyes. What we mean is, where were they looking with their eyes during the talk? Were they looking at people in the audience? Did their eyes go up to the ceiling, floor, looking around the room? A good way to think of this is, did the speaker look right at me? Vocally, how was the volume, especially back in the back where Frank is sitting? We'll listen to see if every word came across crisply and clearly. We'll listen for inflection. Do we hear peaks and valleys? Is it interesting to listen to? Perhaps sliding into a monotone occasionally? Whatever you hear, less feedback. Then the pace, that's the speed of the delivery of the words. Is it too fast or too slow or just right? And finally, we'll be listening for non-words. What's an example of a non-word? You know, all right, okay. Anything that is repeated, particularly if it has no bearing on the subject matter, we'll call a non-word and report on that to the speakers, who, if they were not nervous before hearing what we're going to do after each talk, are probably a little bit nervous now. But this is all in good spirits, and we're going to keep all the comments very constructive, but very direct, so that our three speakers will benefit as well as the rest of us. Now, before we ask Ken to come up and give us the first talk, here is a contract for us. This is what I'm going to be working on. The three volunteers, I can promise you, are going to be better speakers and feel better about it by the time this session is over. Now, let's watch and see how it happens. Ken?
Good morning. One of the things, obviously, we all have in common is not that we're only tax shelter coordinators, but we're all brokers working for E.F. Hutton. And I've only been in the business about a year and a half. One of the most fascinating things I note about this business is that no one started out as a child saying, I want to be a broker. They either want to be firemen or baseball players. And we all came from some, Don Schwall, for instance, and we all came from somewhere else. It might be interesting to note to you that I used to work for E.F. Hutton as a business consultant. My own background is very analytic. I used to work as an economist for the Central Bank of Israel in Jerusalem before coming to work here. I was a business consultant and only then saw the light of how interesting it might be to be a broker. So my background is probably uniquely different, but probably very much in the same in that we all came from different places. Thank you.
Let's give him a hand. Great job, Ken. Don't keep your mic on. Let's give Ken some instant feedback on what we saw and heard. Great talk. But let's be specific. Any signs of nervousness that anybody may have noticed? Yes, what was that? The way he was wringing his hands in front of him was a sign of nervousness to some people. I call that the used car gesture, by the way. Boy, have I got a deal for you. All of these things we do say something to the audience. Any other signs of nervousness?
Yes.
What?
The pace of this talk.
The pace of the talk. In what way did it?
Well, he was trying to be sort of non-nervous by being forth, speaking forth, just the impression of being nervous in the inflections of his voice.
All right, it sounded a bit nervous.
He was talking at a high level.
The pitch of the voice. A lot of things can contribute to it. Anybody else have that feeling in listening to him that he sounded a little bit nervous? Or
no.
Yes?
It wasn't as much nervousness. I think he was hurrying to get in that 60 seconds, and that's what contributed to the high pitch.
All right. What I'm hearing is that one way or the other, whether it was because he was trying to compress a lot of information into a short time or because he really was nervous, it sounded that way. Now, from the audience's point of view, does it make any difference whether you are nervous or not if it looks like it to the audience? No. Well, let's find out. Were you nervous at all?
Sure. A little bit.
All of us are, just
a little
bit.
I still am.
This is one of the hardest things to do, is to stand in front of a group and be talked about. I appreciate your putting up with this. Let's go on with the critique, but with this, yes, other comments?
Three non-words.
We're having a report on the verbal side already. Three non-words. Did it? Was it distracting to anybody? That's when most of us use nine words, when we're trying to think, and we're going to get back to that after another talk. Let me go back to nervousness, just get one thing, I'll get your comment. Did he, and this is for Ken's benefit, did he appear that nervous?
No, not
enough for you to worry about. And that's one of the benefits when you see yourself on videotape, perhaps take an intensive course that you'll walk out with. Sometimes we feel nervous, and that inhibits our own communication because we're concerned about looking nervous to the audience, but I would say in Ken's case, it wouldn't bother us at all. We're just putting the spotlight on it. There was another comment over here.
He was pacing back and forth.
Pacing back and forth. We're moving all over our chart here, but in fact, every one of these things in some way could be a sign of nervousness. Yes?
Ken, I had no sense of your talking to me.
All right, the comment is...
I didn't look at you?
The comment is, I was hearing you, but I didn't feel like you were with me. Let me move down our chart here for a minute and ask this question about eyes. That's the point. He didn't have eye contact with you. How many did get eye contact from Ken at some time during the talk? That's good. A handful of people all around the room. Most people would like to get some eye contact from a speaker, or at least feel that the speaker is making an attempt to really communicate with people rather than just saying words. That's why this question is here. I think that's a pretty good job for eye contact. How about posture? We had a comment about pacing, moving a bit. We had a comment about his hands. What else can you say that he would see on a videotape replay, specifically about posture or where his hands were? Yes? In other words, his body language at the midpoint of the talk suggested, pay more attention, this is an important part of the talk. Good illustration of what we're saying. That many times the way we speak, the gestures we use while we're speaking, say something to the audience as well. Yes, Mary?
But his posture was even. He didn't lean either way. He did walk around a bit, but when he was standing, he stood stably.
And what did that say to you?
It wasn't distracting, whereas when somebody stands on one hip, it's very distracting.
All right. The point here is, the posture itself, if it's out of control, can be a distraction to the audience. In this case, you're getting a compliment that you were standing up straight. Let's quickly go down here. Volume, how was it in the back?
Too low.
Could have been louder. We're hearing from the back of the room. How about inflection? Sound all right? Interesting delivery. The pace of the talk we've already talked about sounded a little fast to some people. And we had a non-word count of three. Anybody disagree with that? All right. Ken, thank you very much. Let's give him another hand. Don?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Don Schwall. Very happy to be here this morning. I'm an assistant regional director for tax shelters with E.F. Hutton & Company in the Atlantic region, the finest tax shelter firm in the United States. I'm very proud to work for them. Before getting into the brokerage business, however, I was the opposite of Ken. I was a baseball player who dreamed of getting into the brokerage business. It has been quite a change, but it's very much like playing baseball in my eyes. You win some, you lose some, you get rained out once in a while when you don't get your private placement. However, it is something that I've enjoyed from the first day I started. It's something that I'm still enjoying thoroughly, and I'm looking forward to everybody in this room having a record year so that both Frank and I will have the best override check we've ever seen. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Don't take your mic off here. Thank you. Well, I may have overpromised. I said everybody would be a little bit better as a speaker. Don's pretty good as a speaker. Let's tell him why specifically. Any signs of nervousness, by the way? And I didn't see any. Don, were you nervous at all?
I was just pepped up a little bit.
Pepped up is a good way to put it. We've all got that surge of nervous energy, but in Don's case, I didn't see any signs of nervousness, particularly anything that would be distracting. How was his posture? Excellent. Standing up straight. Did he move at all? Wonder why? How should you stand in front of a group? Should you stand planted perfectly straight or move around? What's the significance of the fact that it feels better to you? We're going to come to that and cover it very specifically. Yes, comment over here. Are you saying at the beginning of this talk, that's how it appeared to you? The comment is that sometimes standing perfectly straight or appearing to be rigid can be a sign that you're uncomfortable. Why is that important, by the way? Why are we going over this every time? Because if you look nervous in front of a group, the group is not going to think automatically, well, that person's just like everybody else and is a little nervous speaking before a group. They're liable to associate it with your discomfort with the subject matter. And in this business of selling a sophisticated product like tax shelters, the last thing you want is for a client to think you're uncomfortable about the subject matter. So that's why we point this out over and over. Specifically, what about eye contact? How many got direct eye contact from Don? Don, take a look around the room. There are some people in these corners that were missed, but you got people in all points of the room. I'd say that's very good. Did it look pretty good to you in terms of his communication? Yes, Mary?
It was a little bit too sweeping, though.
Right.
I wanted you to...
Yeah, I noticed myself. I think that's, again, that one-minute thing that you're...
I think so.
You got a clock going in your head, you know, as you're talking.
The eye contact may have been a little fast. We saw a lot of people being covered, but not for very long at a time. And specific, you knew that...
Yeah, I knew I was doing. I could feel I was moving a little too fast.
A little
fast.
Too quickly.
Right.
Is volume okay? Nice. Inflection? No problems there at all. The pace of the talk, was it... delivered at a comfortable speed for you? Somebody says too measured. Make a note. We'll listen for that next time. And then what about non-words? I didn't hear any. If there were, it was not distracting. We have somebody who made a point of counting, though, and the word is... All right, you're watching for your own benefit. Don, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, just 1 second. What's this last comment?
Don? You did something that I felt was very important to me, and that was you smiled.
I think that's very important.
I felt comfortable. You did not make eye contact with me, and yet I felt comfortable listening to you.
Let me say one thing about that. We don't have the word smile on the list here because it's very difficult to teach people to do. But it's one of the nice things you can do when you start a talk because most smiles are started by other smiles. So if you're the speaker and you want people smiling, a good way to do it is to smile at them. Thanks, Don. Great job. Mark, anytime you're ready, 60 seconds.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mark Furstein. I'm with the New Brunswick office of E.F. Hutton. I began this week with more anticipation than I've had in 12 years because I was going to see something I haven't seen in 12 years. My top lip. I shaved my mustache on Monday morning. And this caused me more anxiety than I've had in any business situation in quite a time. I started slowly. I sort of liked what was emerging. And then when I was finished, I didn't like it anymore. I went downstairs and my 6-year-old son started to giggle. He said I looked younger. But when I started in the business, I was 23 and I needed some age. Now, I don't need it anymore, but I still may grow it back. So thank you for letting me discuss it with you.
Okay, thank you. Give him a hand. Did anybody do a double take when they saw Mark for the first time this meeting? I did. And let's take a vote. You like it off or on? How many like it off?
This is what I need, this kind
you
of
need
feedback.
You got to hear this now while it's important to you. I think we like it both ways, Mark, but especially... All right, let's have the feedback, instant replay for what we saw, the physical skills, while Mark was speaking. Any signs of nervousness?
When he started, but he soon quit.
All right, and when he started, but what was it specifically that he would see on tape? If he were to see a videotape replay. Somebody said his upper lip trembling. What was it at the very beginning?
Moving around in his hands.
Hands a little bit tense looking, body language. Were you nervous?
Yes.
Giving the talk. But he says he was nervous, but was he that nervous? No, no, not at all. Very disarming, in fact, for us too. Posture, how was he standing? He was swaying a bit. Were you aware of that?
I didn't know what to do.
He said he didn't know what to do. We're going to tell you some ideas in just a minute. His hands, somebody mentioned that just briefly. What was he doing with his hands? He had them in front of him in our famous used car gesture. A lot of people stand in front of a group and put their hands in front like this, which we call the fig leaf position. And as soon as we point that out, they put them behind them, and we call that the reverse fig leaf I mentioned that now that our three volunteers have given their first talk, because we are going to start talking about options for things to do with your hands other than those ideas which we seem to have all had before. How about eye contact? How many got direct eye contact from Ken? Good. This is one of the best showings for eye contact I've seen in these workshops. Were you making a conscious attempt?
Yes.
To look at people? He said yes, and that's the key, by the way.
For people with mustaches or...
Somebody you can relate to. All right, good eye contact. What about volume, especially back over in the corners of the room? How was it? You heard everything, but it could have been a little bit louder, perhaps. Did the volume in any way affect the way you heard the inflection? Yes.
I do not have difficulty hearing you or Don. And I've had my hearing checked, and there's nothing wrong with my hearing. I think some people project and others don't.
There's a word that's coming in this comment, and that is projection.
Yeah, I don't know what the quality is.
Resonance.
The difference between speakers.
All right. Everybody has their own mix that's a combination of their tone of voice and the ability to put that volume out. And the combination is called projection. We're going to focus on that in just a minute. What about pace of the talk? No problems there. Any non-words? I'm looking at our counter. There were none. Mark, thank you very much. Good job. Give him a hand. Now, there are going to be two specific skills we work on for the next two talks. The next talk assignment for our volunteers is this. Tell us a story, 60 seconds or less, about a previous communications experience in which you were personally involved. It doesn't make any difference whether that was you talking to one person or talking to a group of people. And it also makes no difference for our purposes whether it was a successful communications experience or not. But we ask you to do it as a first-person story, mainly for your benefit, because it's easier to tell. As somebody said one time, the beautiful thing about the truth is it's so easy to tell. So just tell us, in other words, don't tell a joke. And don't tell a third-person story, but tell us a story in which you were involved. And again, we'll ask you not to bring your notes up with you if you care to make some in advance. There are two skills we're going to work on. Here's the first one. We ask everybody in the room to think about getting eye contact from the speakers. And we got feedback, and this is an excellent group of speakers, because occasionally when I do these workshops, I said, how many got direct eye contact from the speaker? And no hands go up. Now, this is the central skill that you can take out of here with you that will help you control nervousness and also help you control your communication with members of the group. Why do you think people have a problem with eye contact in front of a group? Because they're concentrating on their topic? Yes, Frank? That was the point he wanted to make. If you look at somebody, you're going to have personal communication. That might increase your sense of nervousness. That's possible. What I'm going to suggest is the opposite, in fact. That by having a series of what amounts to one-on-one conversations, talking to one person at a time, you'll actually feel less nervous because you'll get involved in the kind of communication you're used to doing most of the time. If you're talking to somebody across a table or in a social situation, do you look them in the eye? Most of us do. Let me ask it another way. What happens if you're talking to somebody one-on-one and that person doesn't look you in the eye? What do you think? That you've lost them? What else might you think? That he's hiding something or not interesting. In other words, it's a basic principle of communication one-on-one, face-to-face, that you look at people while you're talking. Why should it be totally different in front of a group? Now, earlier, one of the unsolicited comments was, I had a feeling that he was looking at people, but the eye contact was a little too fast, perhaps sweeping the audience. We have learned to do that out of habit. Even good speakers, many good speakers, have not mastered this particular skill we're talking about, and that is delivering your message to one person at a time. The eye is a muscle, and if you're used to the idea of sweeping the room, it's going to be very hard to break it. But in fact, I think we can demonstrate now that you'll be a much more effective communicator if you talk to one person at a time, which is just exactly what you do in social situations and in any kind of small group or two people talking communication conditions. Just talk to one person at a time. One of the big benefits, besides the audience's appreciation that you're looking at them, is that you get an opportunity occasionally to get response from members of the audience who might either nod their head or shake their head. We're going to ask the three speakers to come up one at a time. We'll get back to these comments, too. And then, in addition to telling us the story, we want you to concentrate on talking to one person at a time. That's your assignment. Just talk to one person at a time. Now, that's a little difficult, as some of you may know if you've tried this before in one of these workshops, because if you're not used to looking at one person at a time, your eyes will have a tendency to go to the ceiling, to go to the floor, to go to another person, and then back. And what we're looking for is one-on-one communication, talking to one person at a time, hopefully delivering a complete thought, but a minimum of 4 or 5 seconds to each person. We're overdoing it. Let me say that in advance. We're overdoing it so that you can practice the skill of talking to one person at a time. Now, the three volunteers, so they can concentrate on the subject matter. I can hear this going through their minds now. How are we going to know that we've talked to each person for 4 or 5 seconds or a complete thought? And the answer is we're going to help you. What we're going to do is ask members of the audience, especially through this middle section, to raise their hand. These will be the eye contact traffic cops. And your job as speakers will be to select one at a time people with their hands raised. And then, for instance, if my hand were raised, I was a member of the group, and you're talking to me, you would continue talking to me until the hand goes down. Now, those of you who have your hands raised, just count silently to yourself to 4 seconds or 5 seconds, 1001, 1002, and then drop your hand after 4 or 5 seconds. Now, that is going to seem like an eternity if you're not used to looking at one person for that length of time. It's not really very long at all. And then just drop your hand when they're through. Now, to make it more interesting, since there is this tendency to look away, if the speaker looks away while your hand is raised and he's engaged you in eye contact, then count for 4 continuous seconds, and if during the 4 seconds the eyes move away from you, start at 0 again. All right? That'll keep them honest and keep them locked in. Any questions from our volunteers? All right, now, beginning now, I'm going to feel free to interrupt if it's useful to help us along. Are you ready, Ken, for the first time? All right, Ken, select one person and tell us the communication story.
Since many of us are here to talk about public speaking, it might be interesting to note that what I'd like to talk to everybody about has nothing to do with public speaking per se, rather with something very personal. Some of the best conversations I ever have are with my 2-year-old daughter. I consider them to be quite expressive and self-rewarding. One of the best ones I've had recently is when I came home one night, my daughter was in a frenzy, she didn't want to go to sleep, and hands. We were sitting in the den, and I said, "It's time to go to sleep, Yardena," and she said, "No sleep." And I said, "Yardena, let's have a little talk about it." "Okay." And we had a little talk, and I said, "You've had a long day. It's been a very hectic day. You've done a lot of things. Tell me about some of the things you did." "Well, I baked, and I went to the pool, and I went swimming, and I helped clean the dishes. And when that whole thing was over, I said, 'You've had a long day. Don't you think it's time to go to sleep?'" And she said, "Yes." And at that point, I took her upstairs, put her in her crib, and the night had begun.
Nice story, Ken. Give him a hand. Leave that on for just a minute. So we're... All right, nice job. Sometimes I have to, and I said this earlier, I have to interrupt because people just won't, in front of a group, lock in on one person. I don't think Ken had that problem at all. Let's get comments from people that he actually spoke to. How did he come across as a communicator this time?
Almost like staring me in the face.
The comment is that it's possible to overdo eye contact. What happens when a speaker just stays with you too long with eye contact? Yeah, you can overdo that. And the person on the receiving end is probably going to avert his or her eyes to get away from it. That'll be a signal. Yes?
I was aware of that when I stopped. I thought about that.
All right. On that point specifically, now I have to take either blame or credit for that because I asked for these volunteers up here. But specifically, when you're using this eye contact technique, if you'll select people in the back of the room to look to as well, you'll overcome this point that you're raising here, that we have a tendency to lower our voice when we're talking to people close up to us. Other comments about Ken's talk on this go around? Yes. The comment is that this particular technique can look like a technique to the audience if you're not careful. And we're doing it for laboratory purposes right now, and it is a little awkward, but the ideal situation would be randomly looking at one person at a time and going from one part of the room to another. Not like a windshield wiper, of course, where you know, anything that you do that looks like a repetitive gesture or technique is going to bother the audience. Thanks for that comment. Other comments about the quality of communication from Ken now, besides the subject matter on this talk? Yes?
Well, Ken was so focused on talking to one person that he stood in this figgly thing the whole time and kind of nodded forward.
All right. What you'd see on videotape is that even though you're doing a great job with eye contact, we still have some options for doing other things with our hands besides the fig leaf position. And perhaps, if you saw yourself on videotape, you'd notice that you are probably, for emphasis, nodding your head a lot while you're talking. Yes?
I noticed that you had your right hand clenched in a fist, hidden behind your left.
Did you know that? Right hand clenched behind the left. I don't know what that
is. Much more awkward this time than last time because I had to focus in on certain people.
All right. We're going to come back to that specific thing about hands in just a minute. Other specific comments before Don gives his talk? All right. Nice job, Ken. Thank you. Give him another hand. Come on up, Don.
In every athlete's career, there comes a time when he knows he's reaching the end of the line. And it's usually caused by some event. It happened to me one day in Pittsburgh. I came into a ball game, bases loaded, two outs in the eighth inning. Harry Walker was the manager, and he came out to the mound, and he said, "Schwall, whatever you do, don't throw this guy a changeup. It's Jimmy Wynn. I managed him. The guy will kill you. Nothing but high, hard stuff inside." I said, "Harry, don't worry about a thing. Go into the dugout. Relax. I'll be there in about 30 seconds when I take care of this turkey."
All right. Hold it 1 second, Don. Does anybody notice that Don's eyes are moving back and forth just a little bit? Let's focus on that now. Who's the next person you're going to talk to?
It was him, yeah.
All right. Are you? All right. Stay right with... What's your name?
Art.
Stay with Art, but concentrate on not moving your eyes a bit. Just lock right in on him.
All right.
All right. What happened when you...
As I said, I'll take care of this turkey. So I got the guy to a 2-2 count. Pagaroni, the catcher, gave me the sign, and I threw the best fastball I had. He hit it about 380 feet over the left field wall. As I was standing there enjoying the sight of the ball, I happened to turn around and I see Harry running out to the mound to me. He said, "Schwall, I told you, don't ever throw him a changeup." And with that, Pag took off his mask and said, "Harry, that was his fastball."
Good story, Don. Stand here for just a minute. Sorry I interrupted, but sometimes that's the only way we can change these little things, and the specific one we're looking for is holding our eyes steady, looking at one person at a time. Let's have some comments specifically about Don's eye contact in this talk.
Shouldn't the eye contact be made for a thought rather than artificially the way we're doing it?
All right, what about the artificial nature of 4 or 5 seconds? Let me give a blanket apology. We're in a laboratory situation, and frankly, it's very difficult to get people to change without some device like that. But in fact, you're right. If you're looking at a person, the correct time is what feels right. And usually that's a thought. Why is that? Because when I make eye contact with somebody in the audience and a natural point is being made, it's perfectly natural for somebody to respond with usually a gesture or a nod of the head at the end of the thought. But if you move your eyes away ahead of time, they won't have that opportunity.
I think I was a little more conscious this time than I've ever been, you know, of looking at one person. Like, I think normally when I'm talking to a group, I don't really look at the guy in the last row like I had to there. I could feel the difference that I actually was looking at him.
Let me thank you for these comments. Now, let me wrap up and say something. Don, I'll let you sit down to listen with us for this, and then we'll... Just before Mark comes up, let me wrap up some of these things about eye contact and I think you've made some good points here, especially about the fact that when you're learning a new technique, it can backfire on you if it appears to be a technique in the audience. I think that was the gist of this last comment. You've got to get comfortable with this yourself. Now, let me go back to the question about, is eye contact for everybody? There perhaps are people who can be as good as they can be as a speaker without really working on eye contact. I see very few of them. And I've worked with a lot of people over the years. Usually this will bring out other things in the speaker because the speaker benefits from eye contact as well as the audience, particularly from this response you get when you're looking at people and there is a little nodding of the head occasionally. Now, let me ask you this. In this business of selling tax shelters, let's imagine a seminar where you're explaining a product to a group of prospects. Do you want to get some kind of feedback before the hostile Q&A session begins? Sure, and the only way you get it is by looking right at people and letting them respond. Even if it's negative, I think we want to get it so we know whether we're getting our message across or not. One final thing for Don, and this is for everybody 6 feet tall in the room and over. You don't have an option if you're a big person about putting out a big message, do you? If there's a disparity between what we see and what we hear, it's going to give us a little bit of a pause, perhaps at a subconscious level. But in terms of communicating as an expert, when you give a financial seminar, you might want to keep that in mind in terms of volume and forcefulness. And the final point, and we're going to get to this in a minute with the last talk, is using your whole body with gestures appropriately for your size and for the subject matter. Let's let Mark give this talk, then we're going to have one last quick one and wrap it up.
I do public speaking from time to time. And I'm your basic do-gooder in that I will lecture to senior citizens about their finances. And I really don't attempt to sell them anything but to explain various parts of the financial world and what could help them. I had a difficult situation about a month ago. I normally go into a meeting and I immediately disarm them with a joke. I rely on my charm for at least the first 10 minutes. But what happened was that I didn't know that I was 20 minutes late. The chairperson told me to start at 1 o'clock. Who knew that they were expecting me at 20 of 1? I walk in the room. I introduce myself. I told them where I was from. This little lady in the corner was saying, "We got a bus to catch." We have a bus to catch. And she was knitting. This was not a good sign. And I didn't know how to react. This happened invariably through the meeting. Because not only did she interrupt my joke, which was supposed to disarm them, she was distracting the attention of anybody interested. So what I finally did was I found a few people in the audience to be my friends. Whenever she said something, they'd say, "Shut up." And the best thing that this lady said during the whole meeting was goodbye. Thank you.
Okay, give him a hand. All right, let's have instant replay for Mark. What did you see and hear specifically about eye contact? Can I have some comments from you, please? He didn't look at you. Did you have your hand raised? You wanted him to look at you, but he didn't?
I thought I looked at you.
All right, let me just ask this one thing. Could it possibly be that there's a glare on Mark's glasses that... All right. Sometimes we don't have the option. If I'm trying to read something, I've got to have glasses. So I'm not saying this is a blanket statement. But in giving seminars, if you do wear glasses, keep in mind that it could have a glare.
I started wearing contacts recently, but I'm still not comfortable with them. It'll be interesting to see my eyes flipping up and down with contacts the next time.
On the subject of comfort, we've talked about this a few minutes ago, and it relates to practicing this skill of eye contact. It's not going to feel comfortable anytime you change some kind of physical behavior. Much like people I know who've taken golf lessons in the process. Now, just change your grip about an eighth of an inch here, and it'll be fine. And they tell me that it never feels comfortable, not at least for a few rounds. And it's the same with this eye contact. We're just asking you to do something that you already do in front of a group a little bit more up. Yes, Don?
I thought one thing you did very well was that when you changed the eye contact, you paused, which kind of gave a new thought to the new person, which I think is good. Rather than cutting off my eye contact in the middle of a statement and going to somebody else.
All right, he had a smooth transition between people as he moved from place to place in the room. Yes, Frank?
Well, I can
volume is still too low.
I'm going to have to ask you to move forward the next time.
All right. Any other specific comments for Mark? We'll have a chance to hear him at a higher volume one more time. All right, Mark. Thanks. Now, we're going to wrap up. The time is rapidly disappearing. It always goes too quickly when you're having fun. And we have one more talk, this final one, and I won't interrupt. We'll just give them in pretty quick succession. Will be our last talk for each speaker. This one will be a favorite story about yourself. Another favorite story about yourself. Only this time, try to build into the story something that provides the raw material to get excited about. Perhaps something, perhaps like a sports story. Don, of course, got some stories that could require some animated delivery, and that's what we're talking about. This ties it all together. What do you do with the rest of your body? You master eye contact. You know the words that you're going to say. Now let's put it all together and make sure our gestures work. Here's the answer to the question, what do you do with your hands in front of a group? The answer is, don't plan gestures. Do exactly the way you do. Watch other people to see this. Do exactly the way you do in a social situation where it is practically impossible to talk without using supportive gestures. They come out naturally. Now, some of you remember seeing one of our former presidents give talks. He tried to, the president I'm thinking about, tried to memorize gestures, and he was fond of saying, my fellow Americans, I have two points I want to make today. The two fingers would go up in the air after the words came out of his mouth. How did that come across? Perhaps that too. I think most people feel that it was rehearsed and therefore maybe insincere. I'm not saying that he was, but I'm saying that's how it can come across. Therefore, the advice is this about what to do with your hands. Get excited about the subject matter. Get rid of inhibitions. And this will automatically be right, what you do with your hands. Most of us watch most speakers. We get in front of a group. All the pressure is up here. Everybody, and there's only one show going on, and you're it. And the result is almost a reverse force that keeps all of our gestures in a little phone booth. We don't want to stick our hands out. Don, this applies to what I said about volume. You got to use this space to look natural. Now, across the desk from somebody, you can make them very nervous if you start waving your arms about. But in front of a group in a room this size, I can't use too much space. This is the appropriate gesture if we're talking about something big. I taught a group of bankers in Hartford, Connecticut a couple of years ago in a videotape training program. And one of the speakers came to the front of the room to give a talk and he said, I'm proud to announce that we're going to build a 9-story building in downtown Hartford. And put his hands right in front of him like this. One of his associates in the back of the room said, hey, that looks like a piggy bank. Here's the point. Find in this story, hopefully you'll have some big things to do for us, but the key here, and the key for all of us, when you take a videotape training program and see yourself getting uninhibited, it will unlock the natural speaker in you. Now, this is the thing we want to suggest for the three volunteers before they come up. Just get a little bit louder than you think you have to be. That was an unsolicited comment for all three of the speakers. We have a bone right next to our ear that prevents us hearing ourselves as other people do. So don't rely upon what you think is right. Get a little bit louder than you think you have to, and the result is, since this body is an ecosystem, the gestures will probably expand a little bit with your increased volume. Now, one final thing I'm going to say, then we'll have the three talks, and it'll be over with. Here is for the analytical people in the room, and I know there are some people who like to have a scientific basis for everything they take in. Here's some science for you about what we're doing right now, about adding enthusiasm and energy to a talk. How fast can a speaker crank out words in words per minute delivery? Anybody know? The suggestion is 160 words, and that's close enough. It's about 150 to 160. Clock a 60-second radio commercial, you'll hear about that many words come out. That's not very many words per minute for the brain power of the average adult. We know that because you can speed read at 700 or 800 words per minute, can you not? How fast can the mind receive and process information when listening to a speaker? Faster than that. That's why we get bored so easily listening to speakers, because our mind is working, let's say, on a slow day at 1,500 words per minute. What's happening between the 1,500 words per minute for every member of the audience and the puny production level of 150 words per minute? That's intellectual word power going out. What's happening in here? That's the war zone for keeping the audience's attention. All more reasons for doing something up here to keep the attention on you instead of noises, distractions, or, as most people will tell you, even at an exciting information-packed meeting like the one we're attending right now, occasionally, even though we're interested in what's going on, our mind will go back to the office or to the golf course or to the King Cole bar downstairs or someplace. That's the challenge for our speakers on our final talk. Add some enthusiasm. Get louder than you think you have to. We've rented this room for the day. They can't stop us. And then we'll give you a little quick feedback after this last talk. Ken, are you ready?
Don Schwall is the baseball person here. But I have two first cousins who were both relief pitchers for the University of Pennsylvania. They're about 10 years older than I am. When I was about 8 years old, my cousin Harvey was just in his senior year of high school, and he was the captain, the cleanup hitter, and the catcher for the Clayton High School baseball team. And I had to be just like Harvey. So I convinced my folks to get me this catcher's mitt. It was terrific. It was big, it was soft, and it was designed actually to catch a hard ball, although I was a bit frightened of one. As soon as I got it, Harvey was somewhere, and his older brother, Norty, was in town. I called him up. I said, "Norty, please come over and pitch some in." He was on vacation from U of P. He came over. We got in the driveway. I held the mitt up. He threw me his fastball. Not too fast, obviously. I was only 8. I caught it. Terrific. We did it again and again and again until Norty wound up, looked at me very seriously, threw his curveball, and it landed right between my eyes. Thanks.
Nice job, Ken. A couple of quick comments before we hear Don's and Mark's. Yes? How were his gestures distracting? Specifically, what would he see on videotape? Were you making an attempt to use gestures? That's what people are telling us from the audience. I appreciate the attempt from the standpoint of this workshop, but I think what we're hearing is it could look a little more natural if you just let it happen. Just let it happen. The most effective kind of gestures are the ones that describe something, like the catcher's mitt, where you automatically put your hand out to show us. And if you'll think of it that way and cut down the effort on gestures, it'll look more natural. Thanks, Ken. Nice job. Give him another hand.
Speaking in behalf of the Budden Company.
Not loud enough.
Louder?
Let's get a little bit louder. All right. Speaking.
Speaking in behalf of E.F. Hutton and Company around the region and the country as a whole, you know that I've done a lot of kidding about my baseball career. In fact, when I get into it, I talk quite a bit about some of my female relationships. However, today I want to set the record straight. I am a very happily married man. In fact, I just celebrated my 20th wedding anniversary. And at the dinner party that night, my wife confided something in me I think is really fantastic. She told me that after 20 years of marriage, I still satisfy her totally sexually. I think that's quite a compliment. I know it's true, because every night when we go to bed, I say, "Patty, would you like to make love?" And she says, "No thanks, I'm satisfied."
Okay, Don. Thanks for the inside story. Let me ask just one question, and we'll let Don sit down. Great job on this talk. He's a good speaker to start with. We know that, but we're looking for that little extra millimeter of skill potential, which you can transfer to money in this business. Let me just ask one question. Did he get too loud?
No.
Don, that question was for you, because we can't hear ourselves, and I think if you'd bring that volume up a little bit more, it's more what we'd expect from seeing you here. Any other specific comments for Don? Yes.
I would have liked to see his gestures that big. It would have been okay.
Yeah, I think I probably do like you. I think I'm so big probably that I'm afraid to really, you know.
Just try stretching out right this minute. You see, sometimes this looks natural to everybody else in the room, but in front of a group, remember, we're still concerned about our image, and we don't want to look silly. And if we feel inhibited about doing something like this, we're probably not going to do it in front of a group. That's the point. Don, I'd give anything if we had videotape today just to get some of the comments captured visually here. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, give him another hand.
I must admit that some of my most animated stories have occurred not in baseball, not in track, not in cross country, but in the market, practicing my chosen profession. Before I got involved in tax shelters, I did a lot of naked options. I sold calls when the market rose, and I sold puts when the market declined, in that order. As a matter of fact, when I was asked one day, to what did I owe my enthusiasm for tax shelters, I told them I was naked ASA when it went to 90, and homestake when it was 80, and I had no place to go. And the incentive was that one day I was on the phone with a client who had just had a very large margin call. Those are the days before super restriction, or when there was super restriction. And he said, "What are you doing to me? Why am I doing business with you? Why are you talking to me now? Discuss this with my attorneys." And this went on and on. I decided I needed shelter. So here I am.
Okay. All right, let's have a couple of quick comments for Mark. How about this talk compared to his previous two? Any difference? Volume is up. What else? Gestures better. Does that mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but more natural? I think that's how it looks to me. Most people are nodding their head. Yes. Yes. The mustache is coming in a little now. We have a very observant audience here today. Any other comments? Yes. And a great smile. Always does. Mark?
Real story.
Mm-hmm. The question I'm hearing is, on the telephone, do we want to communicate with the voice only? I don't know. I don't spend as much time on the phone as you. Well, I don't know if that's a desirable goal. I think if you were to think back over the things we've been doing today, and as I think of it right this minute, I'd have to say no. That the voice alone is not the communicator. By the way, what he said was, watching people in the office on the telephone, where there's nobody, at least on the other end of the phone, seeing it, there's still a lot of gestures going on, a lot of pounding the table and shaking fists and pointing in various directions. If that helps you communicate a little bit better, I think it's great. In fact, a survey was done recently about people listening to others on the telephone, and the result is you can tell on the phone whether a person is lying faster than you can in person. Now, to me, that says there are all kinds of hidden things, including pauses, tone of voice, the way you feel coming through. Remember a word from the 60s? Vibes, vibrations. We're getting that all the time. It's part of communication, and I think we're stuck with it. Yes?
I think everyone in this room communicate on a one-to-one basis, and yet some people have trouble public speaking. I think it's because I remember the application of the Kiss rule. I think many people seem to believe they have to use a different vocabulary, a different grammar, if they're speaking before a group, than they would on a one-to-one basis. They get fouled up in thinking what words to use and the grammar rather than the content. And I think that's the biggest problem. And you can keep it simple.
I agree. Keep it simple. It's really communicating one human being to another. And a lot of the things that we have done to try to enhance public speaking have backfired on us, if I hear what you're saying correctly. And I agree. Our time is up. Let me just say one thing as we leave. We've talked about two simple skills. We've done them in isolation. The key is to put it all together. One is look at people, human beings, eyeball to eyeball. Complete a thought before you move on to another person. That's number one. And second, put some energy in it. You believe in what you're saying. Let us know that with some enthusiasm. Thank you very much.